So when we think of a bad culture or even a good culture, our tendency can be to think immediately of behaviors, like the things that people do in that program, in that organization. Are people working hard or are they not working hard? Are people treating each other with respect or are they treating each other not with respect? Do people have a good attitude or do they have a bad attitude? We tend to think culture change starts with behaviors and changing behaviors, but not always, because feelings impact behaviors. Changing the way it feels to be a part of your culture is an important aspect of culture change, and it's one that Mike Abrashoff definitely was intentional in addressing on the USS Benfold. From day one on that ship, he helped sailors to feel seen and feel heard when he brought them into his captain's barracks and asked them what they enjoyed and what they didn't enjoy about being on the Benfold. But Abrashoff didn't stop there. He focused on improving the onboarding experience. He focused on the language they used, the culture language. He focused on the way the food tasted. He focused on the social gatherings. He was super focused on how people felt, not just what they did. He wasn't just concerned or empathetic with his sailors' feelings. He was actually concerned with how their parents felt, as he will share in this episode. So how can we improve the way it feels to be a part of our team? Well, let's pick right back up with the second half of Nate and I's conversation with the New York Times bestselling author, Captain Mike Abrashoff. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast.
One of the other themes that really struck me, and I'm kind of reading through the book from an eye of trying to improve my own communication and listening practices, is you talk repeatedly about seeing not just your position, but the challenges and the objectives that your crew shared from different perspectives, understanding your crew's perspective. Or when you worked for William Perry, you talked a lot about understanding your boss's perspective and how that made you better in your work. You want to talk a little bit about just why that's so important to be able to see from other people's perspectives as a leader?
Because it will help you communicate back to them in a way that they can understand where you're going, why it's in the organization's best interest, and most importantly, why it's in their own best interest. And when I started talking to them, I realized how diverse my crew truly was. Benfold was the first ship built from the keel up to accommodate both men and women. We had every ethnic background on the ship and racial background on the ship. And for 15% of my crew, English was their second language. And so by putting myself in their shoes, I could try to visualize any problems that they might have an understanding, and that enabled me to help frame the way I communicated with them so that they could connect the dots why it's in their own best interest. So I do that. I call it putting myself in their boots, viewing the operation through their eyes, and then communicating back to them where we're going and why it's in their own best interest. And one size does not fit all. You know, We see things through how we were raised and through our background. Every child is being raised differently and have different backgrounds, and you need to understand what their journey was, and then realize it's different from the journey you came on, and you're communicating to them based on your experience. You need to communicate to them based on their experience. And that forced me to change the way I listen and communicate when I put myself in their shoes.
one of the things I love about that perspective is it helped you, I think, to implement some changes in various processes around the ship that just didn't improve performance, but they just created a better experience. And one of them in particular that I share with coaches often is how you changed your onboarding experience or their first day, even before they arrived the ship, because you had some sailors kind of share their experience about not being so positive. I just thought you might be able to share a little bit about how you tried to implement that culture even before they had arrived on ship and what you did to make them feel welcome, because I think that is so special.
My first night as captain, it was a Friday night at 1 o'clock in the morning. I get a call from my duty officer. One of our sailors had been beaten up out in town, was robbed, and is in serious condition in the hospital. And I said, well, where did it happen? He said, out the south gate of the naval station. And I said, well, doesn't everybody know you don't go out the south gate of the naval station after sunset because it's the worst part of town with drugs, gangs, and violence? He said it was a sailor who just graduated from boot camp in Chicago today, landed at 10 p.m. at the airport. We didn't know he was coming. He makes his way to the ship, drops his duffel bag off, and wants to go out in town. And because nobody's ever told him any differently, he accidentally goes out the wrong gate and gets beat up. 12 hours after I took command, that happened. So I come to work on Monday morning, and I bring my second in command and my command master chief up to my cabin. The command master chief is the senior enlisted guy on the ship, and he represents the crew. And I said, tell me about our onboarding process. How do we onboard newly reporting personnel so that they know not to go out that gate first thing and get beaten up? And neither of them had a clue, which meant we didn't have a process. So what was happening was the boot camp in Chicago never told the ship when the sailors were graduating, so we didn't know to meet them. And then they come on board the ship on a Friday night, and the first people they meet on a ship on Friday night are not the good sailors because they're out in town having fun. The first people they interact with are the restricted sailors who are in trouble and by definition are the poorer performers. So immediately they're interacting with the troublemakers on the ship. And it's like, do you really want your newly reporting people interacting with your worst performers right off the bat? So each of these gentlemen had 5-year-old daughters at the time. And I said, here's the deal. Picture your daughters 13 years from now. They're 18. They enlisted in the Navy, and they get assigned to this ship. How would you want them onboarded? Well, it's different. You know, you want your daughters to be safe. So for the first time, we started liaisoning with the boot camp. And we knew the minute a sailor got assigned to us, we'd assign them a running mate who was the best performer in their parent division. We'd send them a Benfold ball cap. We'd, you know, send them questions about San Diego or information about San Diego, the ship schedule, so that the day that they get first assigned, they have an affiliation with us and they know where to get their questions answered. So then we meet them at the airport when they land because we now know their flights. We have a bunk waiting for them, already made. And that first weekend, we pair them with the best performer in the duty section so that they get off on the right foot. We show them the base. Here's the gym. Here's the pool. Don't go out this gate after sunset because you're going to get beat up. And then by close of business on Tuesday, every newly reporting sailor has to come see me for an introductory interview so that I can make sure that they're getting off on the right foot. That first experience can make or break whether a sailor or a player is going to be successful or not, by how well you get them off right off the bat. And if they're interacting with the worst players or the worst sailors, they have a greater propensity to stray.
Yeah, and it's that story, when I read that I helped multiple programs implement a big brother or a big sister program, where before they were even showed up to their first practice, they were partnered up with someone. And that person was tasked with looking after them and making sure that their first few practices or first week was phenomenal. So I appreciate you sharing that story, because it's just been something I love sharing with people.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from that?
It's been incredible. because, you know, and Nate, I know, has used it as well. And one of the cool things about it has been, I really encourage the coach not to necessarily tell the players, like, do this, do this, do that. Just put them in there. Like, you did an exceptional job in that situation of putting those people in position to reflect on, like, when their daughter was 13 years older. So we try to do that with the athletes, where we say, hey, what was your first experience like? What did it feel like? How do you want it to feel for people coming in here? And then how can you create that? And we really task them to come up with some ways that they can really make people feel welcome to the program.
It's not rocket science, but it's just about executing on simple things better than anybody else. And so everything I did was to, would my own son or daughter understand it? And if not, then I got to communicate better. So it was all about imagining one of your loved ones coming to work for you or play for you, and how you would want them to be successful, and how, when they leave the program, that they're leaving with guidelines that can help them for the rest of their lives.
And I think that touches on a really big piece I want to also bring up, which is you have a great capacity for empathy. I think you don't just empathize with your sailors, you empathized with their families. And this is probably, in coaching world, this is the hottest topic, which is parents in sports. You found the time to write your sailors' parents letters. You did other things out there to intentionally, you know, speak into them and affirm them of their son or daughter's value and what they were doing for the Navy. That's for I think a lot of coaches out there, they would think that was absolutely crazy. Here they're 18, 19, they're adults, and you're out, you know, taking the time and being intentional to reach out to their families.
Can you imagine if the parents don't know the coach, and then the player calls complaining about the coach? They're going to take the child's side, the player's side. But if you have a relationship with those parents, they could say, that doesn't sound like the coach. You know, maybe you need to calibrate how you're looking at this. And so when I get the parents on my side, that helps give support to their kids to work harder or to work better or to make it a positive experience. And so I still communicate with many parents of my sailors. And so that's how you know, your coaches are here for the long term. Even if they go to a different program, it's their reputation that's going to follow them. And I just found that it didn't take a lot of time, but once the parents knew that, you know, I had their children's best interests at heart, they became my supporters as well instead of a detractor.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about here is that phrase that comes up. It's in the title of the book, and you mention it often, the best damn ship in the Navy. You know, the Benfold was not the best ship in the Navy when you took over. And I think sometimes when we come in with a phrase or a motto or something that we're trying to draw people to, it can be seen as a little corny and maybe a little bit cheesy, but your guys really kind of bonded over that and were motivated by that. That phrase became such a signature for your experience on the Benfold.
I'm not talking out of school, but PJ Fleck, the head coach of the Minnesota Gophers, heard me speak about 10 years ago when he was at Western Michigan. And in my presentation, I didn't know he was the head coach of Western Michigan at the time. But I scanned the audience and I can tell whether they're engaged or not. PJ took 10 pages of notes during my hour-long presentation. So whatever I was saying connected with him to connect to something else. I mean, he was just an idea factory. And then I later found out he was the head coach. Western Michigan goes on to do great things. Then he goes to Minnesota. But from that presentation, he came up with row the boat. So there's a ship analogy to row the boat. And he's given me credit in the media in Minnesota that that's he was inspired by It's Your Ship to come up with Row the Boat. And that has galvanized student bodies at two universities now. And so sometimes you think it's corny, but what I used to say to my sailors, if you see a visitor walk on board this ship, walk up to them, look them in the eye, shake their hand, and say, welcome to the best damn ship in the Navy. And you should hear the feedback I would get from visitors, that they've never had anybody smiling, look them in the eye and say, you know, we're the best. And so if people think they can be the best, they will search for ways to become the best. And by getting them to believe in themselves, that we realize there is no one keeping us from being the best damn ship except ourselves. It's nobody else. We own this. And that's what got them to buy into a corny slogan.
That mantra didn't just carry through to performance. It carried through to the experience. And we've talked a little bit about experience today. You created, with your sailor's help, a great experience. I mean, by three quarters of the way I was reading the book, I was ready to sign up. I wanted to be on your ship. I heard about Tuesday's cigar and jazz night. Friday was happy hour with wings, shrimp, and karaoke. And I was like, how do I get on that ship? Like, I think this is a big challenge for coaches, though, as we get tied up in performance. We forget about the fun and enjoyable experiences. It can be a struggle to balance that, because I think often we feel that the happy hours that you were organizing or whatever it was might detract from their focus or their performance.
I think that the fun creates the camaraderie and the esprit de corps that causes the crew to bond together better. And so I can envision from my own days playing that the more camaraderie you have on a team, the more you'll pull together when times are tough and dig deep to overcome a hurdle. So I can't, and why do something if it's not going to be fun? But fun doesn't always have to mean, you know, having a happy hour. Fun comes from winning and improving and making progress. And so you have to celebrate that so that people get that satisfaction that increases their camaraderie and their teamwork.
Oh, that's a great answer. And, you know, one of the other things in the book here, one of the most common names that comes up is William Perry. And you talk about just the relationship that you had with him, serving under him when he was Secretary of Defense. And JP and I are in the business of mentoring coaches, so I don't want this to be a plug for mentorship. But there was clearly an influence that he had on your life and your experience and your development as a leader. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that dynamic and maybe some of the things that you took away from that experience of working for him.
So he was the Secretary of Defense. Between me and him was the senior military assistant, who's a 3-star admiral or general. And Colin Powell had the job. Admiral McRaven had the job, the guy who planned the raid that captured bin Laden, later went on to be president of UT, University of Texas. And so more precisely, you know, I worked for the general, and I was an individual contributor. My job was to push paper. Every day, a 4-foot stack of paper would come into the office. They gave me a box of yellow highlighters, and I'd highlight what I thought was important for SecDef to see. And I would get this 4-foot stack of paper down to maybe 8 or 9 inches. And I put it in the general's in basket. And from my desk, I could watch him work. And at the beginning, he threw 90% of what I thought was important away to be destroyed and never sent it to the secretary. And I was completely demoralized. 90% of my work is getting thrown out, and I'm not getting any feedback as to how to get better. And I couldn't imagine being miserable for another 26 months that I had left in the job. So instead of saying, mentor me, every night at 8:30 when the general went home from work, I'd go into his office, take the burn bag out. That's what it's called, where you put classified material. empty it out on his desk, and I'd compare everything of mine that he threw away and compared it to what he sent on to the secretary. And what I tried to do was to train myself to think like the general. And by doing that, within a month, I got that 8 or 9 inches down to 1 or 2. And I would watch the general work. He would just rubber stamp it and send it right on to the secretary. And I felt better about myself. And so in meetings, they never asked me for my opinion. I'd sit in the back row. But before they came to a decision, I would say to myself, if I'm the general or if I'm William Perry, what decision would I make based on what just happened? And if I made the same decision that they made, it was like, gee, I can think like the general, or I can think like the Secretary of Defense. And if they made a different decision, it meant there was a gap in my training that I needed to go fill. So what that enabled me to do was to start anticipating what needed to be done. And I would do it before they ever asked for it. And the general started to trust me more. He put me in charge of the SecDef security detail, the communications team, the trip planning team. I had 45 people reporting to me in a job that was previously an individual contributor. And he never gave me any feedback. But who I got it from was his wife. One day she came into the office, came back to my desk, and she said, I want to thank you for everything you're doing for Paul, because for the first time since he's had this job, he's coming home at night happy. And that's what I tried to do, was to learn, watch how they make decisions, train myself to think like that, understand how they made the decisions so that I could have a greater impact and greater influence. And so, and if there was something I didn't understand at the end of the day, you know, when things died down, I'd go, General, can you tell me how you came to this decision, what you were thinking that I need to start thinking about? And so to me, you know, I get people all the time, Mike, will you mentor me? Well, you're 3,000 miles away. I can't mentor you from 3,000 miles away. People have an obligation to learn from their boss, put themselves in their shoes, and try to anticipate a decision. And if it's the same decision, it's like, gee, you're on the right track. If it's a different decision, learn, ask the boss later in the day how you could have done better. And so that, to me, is what mentoring is going in with specific questions so that the boss doesn't waste his or her time, you know, telling you the whole scenario. Instead, just focus on what you need. So it's more actionable, it's more efficient, and it puts the onus on you to drive that mentoring relationship, not the mentor who doesn't have enough time on his or her hands as it is anyway.
So I want to take a quick break to let you know about a game-changing, yes, I use the word game-changing. I know some people don't like it, but it is. It's a game-changing system for your culture, the Captain's Council Leadership System. It's based on many of these principles from Captain Mike Abershoff. It's about creating a better experience, and it's about empowering your players to drive that change. My course that I'm offering at CoachTube.com, it's going to train you and your staff in just under an hour so that you have a clear idea of how to implement it effectively this season, as well as give you some simple resources to save you time. And a lot of coaches out there, you've got shortened seasons due to COVID-19. I know some of you are thinking, oh man, I don't have time for another thing. This isn't another thing. This isn't a time suck. It's a time saver. Your investment of time will produce incredible returns for your culture. And even if your season has been cut in half, this system can be implemented and run incredibly effectively. Use the link in the details of this episode. Save 10% by using the coupon code coachingculture. And that's it. Let's get back to the rest of this episode. And that's an incredible story of how you kind of took ownership there of your own growth, but allowed your experiences to help you. And obviously, probably a really great message for a lot of assistant coaches out there too, who sometimes maybe want more guidance or feedback and get frustrated with their head coach. So I love that. Now, as we kind of wrap up here, because you have spent so much time with us, which we are really grateful for, but got a couple quick questions for you. We just kind of want to throw your way. Just honestly, I kind of asked a few coaches that I had recommended your book. They read it. They loved it. So I told them, hey, we're having you on the podcast. They shout out the question. So one of the first ones is, what do you think is the most outdated leadership practice that you saw in the Navy when you were there?
Leading through intimidation. I've had captains when I was coming up through the ranks who would scream at me until their veins popped out of their neck and their forehead. And you know what? It didn't intimidate me. It made them look stupid. I'd rather have somebody calmly telling me what I did wrong instead of yelling at me and trying to intimidate me. So I don't think intimidation is the right method to get a point across these days.
What was one of the best or most worthwhile investments that you've ever made in yourself as a leader?
Learning how not to respond to a setback in the moment, but instead take a deep breath, step back, and ask myself what I could have done differently or better to have generated a better outcome. Because sometimes we are so intense and we want to win so badly that our emotions get the best of us. And in my dealings with my sailors, if I got emotional, I lost the argument. I win arguments on facts. I don't win arguments when it comes emotional or adversarial. So that was what I had to do, was to keep my emotions in check and run on facts.
I appreciate that. Mike, we'll get you out of here on this. Now, off air, before we started recording, you kind of went through your athletic resume as a high school football player, had a number of opportunities and continued to play 3 years in college. One of the things that we try to motivate and share with the coaches that we work with is that, you know, their experience through sports, we're really trying to get them and prepare them for what lies ahead in life. And I just wonder if you might be able to speak to your experience as a player and some of the things that maybe you learned with your own sports background that maybe continue to serve you or serve you in your career in the Navy and what you continue to do today.
I think what sports taught me was not to be selfish, but to do everything for the good of the team. And if I've got to change the way I operate so that the team can do better, I will change it. And so I also think the experience at the Naval Academy taught that as well, that team before self. And it's tough to do, but you always have to think about it and ask yourself, how am I being perceived? Am I being perceived as doing this for my own best interest or for the team's best interest? And if you do it for the team, nobody ever challenges your motives.
All right, that's it for our conversation with Captain Avershoff. Like I said earlier, the book, It's Your Ship, it's my favorite leadership book of all time. It's also the favorite leadership book of the 49ers coach Bill Walsh, as well as a favorite of Bill Belichick, of the New England Patriots. So honestly, it was pretty special to interview him. I was pretty nervous, but do check out his book. I promise you it's going to make you a better leader, and it's entertaining. He's got a great sense of humor. And also check out the CoachTube Captain's Council Leadership System course. When you buy it, you get lifetime access to the course. It's an on-demand video course with several exclusive resources. Links will be in the details of this episode, as well as on the homepage of ThriveOnChallenge.com. Links to all my online courses there.